Back now with Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. And Chief, we haven't talked in a while. A couple of seasons have passed, I believe, and not much happening in the world, I guess. So how you doing?
Yeah. So it's been a little bit, and yeah, we definitely we miss some of the old normal things, but
yeah.
We're all adjusting to the quote unquote new normal, whether we like it, don't like it. There has certainly been some benefits, I would say, that have come out of this whole thing, because we are resilient creatures as humans, and we find ways to work around just about any problem that you throw at us. So while there's been a lot of positives, and we've seen a lot of wonderful things out of people, it's still difficult, and we're all still trying to get used to that. One of the bigger impacts here in a firehouse, I mean, we have pretty tight quarters in the station, so it's been a challenge in the station for all of our personnel, beyond just dealing with COVID-19 and everything that we've seen in the paper, and we can't thank the public enough for their support and trust and continued backing of what we do, and the constant reminders and thanks that we get for, you know, coming to work and doing a job that we love to do in the face of something that's made it, you know, a little bit more difficult. But, you know, we've always known that this is an issue that's out there, and we've trained and prepped and planned and have a lot of things in place for it. But, you know, you just really, we've never had to do it before. You know, we've talked a lot about it. We know it's a risk and a threat, but we've never had to do it. Now we're having to do it. And certainly none of us that are doing it are enjoying it. This is not what we wish to happen and to deal with, but we go out there every day and do our thing, and obviously the public has responded to that in a very positive manner and thanking us, and we greatly appreciate you know, that they identify that this is difficult for us as it is for them. But I think, you know, for a lot of folks out there, in many aspects, this whole thing is far more difficult on them, even than it is on us trying to deal with it in the field. I mean, we have the training, and most of the time we have the equipment. We are blessed here that we paid attention to this over many years, and the personnel that were here before me and during the beginning of my tenure here. And so we were well positioned to manage this, and we've done a pretty good job of it, I think. And we continue to, but it's definitely changed life in the firehouse. I mean, while I'm talking to you right now, even though my assistant chief isn't in the room with me right now, I'm wearing a mask, and it is what it is. And everybody in the buildings are wearing masks. 90% of the time in the trucks, they're wearing masks, because again, we don't have the ability to social distance, even in our own facilities and workplace. And so we've got to take these steps, and they are certainly inconvenient, and we do not like them, and we are longing for the days of old without this, but we'll see if and when that occurs, at least during my tenure and the time I've got left being fire chief and in the business here. You know, there's a lot of guys that are just starting a career out, and they're starting it out in this environment. So different animal.
Yeah,
plenty of different animals. But you know, we just want to thank the public. We can't thank them enough for all the support. I mean, literally hundreds of people have made personal donations, business donations, large and small, and they all absolutely count, from you know, folks coming by with a box of gloves and a box of surgical masks, to people that are, you know, buying lunch for the whole shift. And donating hundreds and hundreds of N95 masks from their businesses, you know, and even some of the folks out of there in private life donating significant quantities of PPE, knowing all well that everybody needs it, but they chose to get it to us, obviously, on the quote-unquote front line, being first responders. Everybody's identified the importance of trying to keep us safe so we can continue to do our mission and to do the work that we do, and try to keep everyone else safe. But it's been incredible. It's been extremely humbling. And, you know, we're going to be doing some things here coming up in the future, at least putting out some public notice of our thanks from both myself, as the obviously the chief of the department and from the union as a whole. It's been an extremely collaboration between the labor and management here in the Gloucester Fire Department, and from what I can see, pretty much every department within the city, as well as across the Commonwealth and the country, that, you know, some of those adversarial issues that come up between, you know, employer and employee, we haven't had to deal with. You know, the guys and gals here and the union leadership have really, they haven't fought about anything. They understand there's been a lot of hard decisions to be made. We've made them. We've made them together as often as possible, and we'll get through it. But, you know, the mission has definitely come first at all levels in emergency services, from what I can see. You know, obviously I have blinders on to other areas of the world, and I don't know exactly their internal operations, but I know here it hasn't been simple, hasn't been easy, but we are definitely doing it cooperatively, and we're getting through it together as a team. So it's been extremely humbling, and I can't thank not only the public, but everybody that works here in this department and the mayor's office and their support, all the way up through, you know, Governor Baker's office. It's made a huge difference for all of us in what we've been facing. Could have been a lot worse had the support not been there.
Mm-hmm. Early on, different organizations, police departments, fire departments, and so on, were making staffing changes. Did you guys do any staffing changes, Chief?
We absolutely did. So, I mean, you know, when we were looking at the preliminary numbers and the unknowns, and, you know, and I'm breaking out the calculator and the abacus to try to do some crystal ball magic and figure out, well, how bad could this thing get, and what do I need in resources, both, you know, physical PPE resources, you know, personnel resources on a day-to-day, and staffing of our apparatus and equipment to make sure that we've got the right number of people in the right places to manage this. We certainly staffed up. We normally run, you know, two personnel on most all the trucks, except at headquarters, where we're running four to five on the engine and usually four on the ladder truck. And technically, we call it six personnel, but two of them are permanently assigned to one rescue. Another two are assigned to the other rescue, and they kind of hop back and forth. So we traditionally have two transporting ALS paramedic staff, you know, ambulances or rescues, rescue squads, as a lot of folks call them, here in the department. We also own two reserve rescues, and we stood both of those up and staffed those with two paramedics on each and positioned them up in Bayview and out in West Gloucester. So we had, you know, at least the four ambulances on duty every day. In addition to that, we put extra personnel in the outskirts stations to staff up those engine companies to where they would operate with at least three personnel during the peak of this thing. Because as our policy and procedures kind of evolved and took shape in March, it became very clear and evident that each station needed to operate independently nearly, and to be able to properly take care of a patient start to finish and deliver them, you know, to the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And when they did that, they're doing an announcement, sorry.
No worries.
Summer construction season continues, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah, for us, the requirement was a need. You know, you got to have a safety officer. We got to have two people on that rescue. We may need an additional person that can drive, because if both the people on the rescue become contaminated from entering a scene and doing significant amounts of care on a call, then it was more appropriate for them to not get back in the front of the truck and contaminate there, but to stay in the back. So the logistics around it, when you look at it, it's not a simple thing. You know, we tried to turn it into a simple thing so we could do it on each and every call, and we were really successful with that. We had very few, incidents where our folks were exposed, on the occasion that it happened, it was, you know, a mask got dislodged in one case, and those things happen. It's just an equipment issue and a positional issue. And so I think we've done a pretty good job. We haven't had any personnel out for too long. We have definitely had several out for a significant amount of time, but everyone's back to work. Nobody suffered any ill effects from it. And so we did really, really well protecting not only our personnel, but I think that that extends itself to the public, because obviously if we're not doing the appropriate things to keep us healthy and to ensure that our equipment and machines are sanitized and decontaminated to where there's no risk for the next customer, if you will, then we wouldn't be doing our jobs and we wouldn't be able to discharge our jobs properly. So, you know, all the men and women that work here have done a fabulous job with that. And so we've gotten through it. And the reality is it's not over. Mm-hmm. I mean, this whole first surge, the surge piece is over, but it's not gone. And there is significant potential for it to resurge and become a large problem as it was previously on healthcare system and emergency services. If people decide to start to ease up on the restrictions and mask use and hand washing and sanitizing. So we can't urge the public enough to continue on the path. I know it's difficult. We don't like it either. But to continue to do all those things that help control the spread and slow this thing down. I mean, we got hit pretty hard here in Massachusetts, and we don't want to get hit hard again. We need to, you know, knock this thing down and keep it down. And I think the only way to do that is to follow the guidance that's out there and adhere to it pretty strictly to the best of everyone's abilities. We shouldn't be taking foolish risks and doing things that are going to put others in harm's way. But obviously, you know, people are going to do what they're going to do and we'll respond and do the things that we got to do to help take care of folks if they get sick. And that's about it.
Yeah, well, you know, has there been a common theme, Chief, when the Chiefs get together? I'm assuming you still do that probably remotely, but is there a common theme? You guys share information, and it sounds like, pretty much other communities are pretty much responding the same way we are.
They are, and, when this initially occurred, it was not so simple to continue to have those kind of larger group discussions, but we got over that pretty quickly. I mean, every community kind of dealt with this to some degree individually because every community is fairly unique in what we do on the street. You know, some communities around us, they don't really do a whole lot of EMS. They may first respond to real significant issues, but nothing else, and they don't have transporting ambulances. They may or may not operate, at the BLS level, basic life support, or at the ALS level, which we respond to at the advanced life support level. So we're fairly unique, not only geographically, but this department does a lot more than some communities do, just because of where they're located, the help that they have around them, you know, their communities. Thoughts and ideas on how to provide EMS effectively. For us, we know that the way we're doing it is the most effective way to do it in this community, and it works. But that means we own it in the fire department, which a lot of other fire departments do not. And so when it comes to that kind of collaboration, other departments near us that do it, we have certainly collaborated and shared ideas. But a lot of it was common sense and developing, you know, plans, procedures that modified what you already had on the books specific to COVID-19 was really more of an individual approach to make sure your community and what you do and how you discharge it. But to some degree, for people that may not have been as well prepared, mm-hmm. you know, what PPE did they have on hand? What could they say to do and wear and sustain that in the long term during this event? So like I said, we're very fortunate, we're well prepared, and continue to try to rebound and get our supplies and stores back up. But the supply chain is still not where it needs to be, so there is concern about that. And again, that's why we can't advocate enough for people doing the right thing to keep this thing suppressed to avoid, you know, getting back into another surge.
All right, well, Chief, finally, it's been pretty dry. We had a pretty miserable spring for the most part, but the last, what, 2 or 3 weeks, it's been pretty dry. So, you know, I always ask you seasonally for your advice to the public. And so what is it at this time of year?
Yeah, so, I mean, our advocacy for, you know, being careful, being safe, and doing the right things with outdoor fires, you know, it has not changed. Open burning season has come and gone, and as you said, it was kind of a late start, if you will. You know, it was not a real wet winter, not a lot of snow, so, you know, and, but then it kind of drug on. It was cooler, it was a bit rainy and wet, not a ton, but enough to really kind of keep people from getting a lot of the open burning legally, you know, under the permit that we issue, done during that time frame. And when it closed out, I've seen and know and are hearing, you know, and seeing the reports that some people have continued to conduct some open burning on their property. And so we've gotten that all ironed out and reminded folks of what the rules are and so forth. But there are still the ability to have outdoor fires legally. When you look, you know, under both the state and local requirements and restrictions on that, you are certainly allowed to have a cooking fire, but it has to be, you know, fairly small and controlled, and you need to be cooking. You know, people that are going to play the game and, you know, wrap a rock with aluminum foil and tell us that they're cooking a potato, that's not going to fly.
I hadn't heard that one. Okay.
we've been wise to that for decades and decades.
Okay.
And, you know, if you're out there burning to the point where you're creating a lot of smoke and you're creating a nuisance, especially depending on what's going on in the atmosphere and the weather patterns and wind and so forth. I mean, if you're creating a lot of smoke because the stuff you're burning is just not really appropriate and you're neighbors are calling and complaining to the fire department about, hey, there's something burning around me, I'm not even sure where it is. Could be out in the field, could be out in the woods, could be a neighbor, I don't know, but it's making a nuisance in my home when I'm trying to have my windows open or be outside, and it's not really tenable. And some folks have significant sensitivities to that stuff, and mm-hmm. you know, they have medical issues and asthma and I've heard, you know, from numerous folks that, hey, with COVID out there, you know, we need to tighten this down even more. And the reality is the regulations are already in place. We're not going to add to any regulations. It's a matter of people trying to do the right thing, hopefully, and be responsible when they are having an outdoor fire, when they're cooking, if they're using, you know, any kind of outdoor fireplace or chimneys, to follow and adhere to the ordinances that are on the books for the city. So all of that is readily available to review and look at online. It's pretty simple. We just put out a press release that you can see on the blog page of the city's, the Gloucester Fire Department's website. So, you know, folks can go there and take a look at that, and it gives you a lot of good information about what to do and what not to do. I mean, the big thing is if you're generating a lot of smoke, then you're burning the wrong stuff, or you're just not, you know, managing your fire properly. I mean, there are flammable things around you because we can't afford to have, you know, a fire take off, an outdoor fire take off, just because people are being complacent and having a fire outside that leads to, you know, property damage, destruction, and displacement of others just because you want to have a little outdoor fire. If you're going to do it, you got to do it right. You got to do it responsibly. Or when people start calling, we're going to show up and we're going to make you put it out. If it's a repeat problem, you're going to end up getting fined. And we really don't like to do that. That's definitely not our first step in management of this stuff. But there is, you know, because so many people are trying to get outside because we've been cooped up and there's been such a lack of socialization that, you know, for a lot of folks, you know, in that small, what people are calling a pod now of, you know, neighbors and family and whatnot, that, hey, if we stay 6 feet apart, we put on a mask and we can get together and have a small group of 6, 7 of us and sit around the fire pit at a reasonable distance and kind of socialize. We get all that. We understand that. But at the same time, it has to be done appropriately. Mm-hmm. So we're getting those complaints, then we're going to have to come out and take the appropriate steps, and hopefully if people are just doing the right thing, we can avoid all of the above. Everybody can go about doing what it is they're doing and enjoy themselves, and it's not creating a problem.
All right, that is the chief of the Gloucester Fire Department, Eric Smith. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.